It's Wednesday, the 20th of August. I'm Alec Hogg. Here's your BizNews briefing. In today's show, pressure on BEE grows from overseas in particular. General Mafanya has now joined the national discourse on Wither South Africa. We will hear more on the general's visit to Iran from William Sanderson Mayer. Plus, in today's program, the most famous policeman of the moment, General Mkhwanazi, makes an appearance. So with police, the chairman of the Oversight Committee on SAPS, Ian Cameron, attacked last night after an overseeing visit with two of his colleagues, including another member of parliament. We'll hear from Ian. Was it deliberate or just random? And then in the tailpiece, well, the national dialogue of Cyril Ramaphosa is not exactly having the desired effect or the effect that the ANC and he expected. This time, it is a young woman who represents millions of learners who's pretty irritated. But let's kick off with The Economist. This is the most influential publication in the world. And every week they have five leaders where they look across boundaries and focus on issues that are of import to the global economy and the movers and shakers therein. This week, South Africa's BEE policies were in focus. Here's how The Economist describes it.
After the end of apartheid, South Africa embarked on one of the world's most extensive attempts to redress racial inequality. At the centre of this effort is Black Economic Empowerment, or BEE, a set of policies that in effect force firms to sell discounted assets to black investors, hire more black managers, and buy more from black suppliers. BEE is being questioned like never before. The Trump administration cites BEE as a reason it's imposing 30% tariffs on the country. Inside South Africa, there's growing concern that these policies, while perhaps necessary at first, are no longer useful. BEE has mostly benefited a tiny black elite, while constraining economic growth, undermining the social stability it was meant to underpin. Foreign firms can win exemptions from the ownership rules of BEE through equity equivalence schemes. Microsoft, for example, funded local startups. Starlink, Elon Musk's satellite internet firm, may be able to strike a similar deal. But these are still extra costs for firms that could invest elsewhere, adding to South Africa's lack of dynamism. The rate at which firms enter and exit the economy is a third of that in other middle-income countries. Muletsi Mbeki, a commentator, says that BEE has created a parasitic club of black South Africans who, with exceptions, are content to take their share of existing firms rather than build their own. Combined with high salaries in the public sector, the state wage bill accounts for 15% of GDP versus the OECD average of 10%. This leads to low levels of black entrepreneurship, he argues. Sepo Maloele, one of South Africa's richest men, supports transformation but worries about the way BEE can add an asterisk to black success. The 57-year-old, who has taken part in BEE deals but has also invested successfully outside South Africa, says that in some eyes, when I walk into a room, I'm not first a business person, I'm a black business person. The ANC remains wedded to BEE, despite pressure from the Trump administration and from its main coalition partner, the Liberal Democratic Alliance. Indeed, its solution to problems with the policy seems to be more state control. It wants to set up a state-led transformation fund paid for by firms. Tweaks passed this year have imposed more stringent quotas. Mr. Ramaphosa argues that BEE is not just a policy choice, but a constitutional imperative. He says it is a false notion that we must make a choice between growth and transformation. The truth is that more than 30 years on from apartheid, his country has too little of either.
In an article last week, The Economist said, Mr. Ramaphosa, the policy that made you rich is making your country poor. I don't think there's going to be too many people in this country who will be debating that. Ian Cameron is the chairman of the Parliamentary Committee on Police. Yesterday, he and two colleagues, Nicholas Gotzel MP and Lisa Schickeling, came under attack after an oversight visit to the Philippi SAPS Training Academy. Cameron, on his Facebook page, said it was a serious and deliberate attack and underscores the risks faced during oversight work. Earlier this morning, my colleague Chris Stain caught up with the parliamentarian.
And it was in a space of seconds, and they broke the window on my side. And shortly after that, me and the guy that was trying to get in on my side was like, I was trying to keep him out, and he kept on coming and kept on like hitting. I don't know what he had. I'm guessing it was another brick, but the brick that he broke in with was already inside the car. It was on my lap. And I was pushing him away, and then I just heard another shot on the other side, not a gunshot, just a noise, a loud noise. Looked around, and they had hit Nicholas on his head, a very, very bad wound. He was just covered in blood. His whole face was covered in blood. His clothes was covered in blood. And at that very moment, they hit Lisa's side as well. So there were two guys trying to get in on that side. Nick fell down to his lap with his head. Tried to defend us with what we had, and we managed to escape. But it was quite a scary experience. They just kept coming. It was like nothing would scare them off, you know. We all threw punches and were fighting back, and they never managed to steal anything. But they were very determined to get into the vehicle.
So at what stage did you get to your firearm?
So I probably when Nick dropped down to his lap, I knew that that's the only opportunity that we had. They kept coming, and Nick was definitely losing a lot of blood. At that stage, from what I recall, leant over, reached for it, I pushed him down, and then did what needed to be done. And that was it. Then we sped off to the closest petrol garage.
Mm. The attacker that Ian Cameron did manage to fend off with his firearm, he shot him, is in a critical condition. But as Chris said, and you can get that full interview on BizNews TV, Ian, Lisa, and Nicholas are now safe and recovering.
Robertson, a small town in the middle of nowhere where a wine farmer claims to have sold a Volkswagen up to e-buy cars.
A farmer?
What car did you really sell them?
A VW.
Right here in Robertson.
Small town, but we know about e-buy cars.
Yeah, but what's a farmer doing with a VW up?
It was just a runaround.
Cool cover story. And I see you traded it in for this, a double cab Danay. Were they all out of Rangers?
We buy cars, the easiest way to sell your car by far.
That's life. That's what all the people say. That's life.
At SunExchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
Mm-hmm. Well, there might be a national dialogue that's just been held and, well, to all intents and purposes, pretty disastrous, and we'll have more of that in the tailpiece. But that is not to say that there's not a dialogue going on in South Africa. General Mafanya decided to go to Iran at just about the worst possible moment for the negotiations between South Africa and the United States of America on a 30% trade tariff that will put well over 100,000 people in this country out of work if it isn't moderated and moderated soon. But he, however, might be illustrating something much darker, much deeper that is happening in this country. We'll hear in a little while from General Mkhwanazi, who also has hit the public consciousness. But yesterday I spoke with William Sanderson Mayer. He is the columnist who has written the longest running political column in South Africa. It's called Jaundiced Eye. And he expresses a view that South Africa has not been in a more dangerous place since 1994.
The worst scenario, to my mind, is a continued slide towards what's happened in virtually every post-liberation African state, a slide towards a despotic government, authoritarian government. If our slide to that relies on the actions of Cyril Ramaphosa and John Stiernason, I don't have a lot of hope to prevent that slide. But I think you've made an important link which I haven't thought about before, and that is the one between the police and the defense force. Because there are no heroes. Mkhwanazi, I doubt, will turn out to be a hero. He's very likely as compromised as the people that he's taking on. What is happening in the police is a battle between factions now. If you add in the SANDF as a third disintegrating source of South African security, then we are really in a very difficult situation. And I honestly don't know how one prevents that. What one needs is a very strong civil society response, an outraged media, an angry response from the NGOs, who at the moment are more fussed about how much hot air is going to be expelled at the national dialogue and who gets to expel it. We sleepwalking at the moment. Maybe what will change it is some sharp, short reactions from the United States, some sanctioning, some more punitive responses from the U.S., because I think that seems to me the direction in which the U.S. is going. I think its patience is wearing out. But the trade issue is irrelevant almost. What lay behind the U.S.'s actions was concern about where South Africa is moving in terms of its international alliances. This, for the Iranian visit, accentuates that and aggravates it. And now, as you say, we at the same time we have a disintegrating and uncontrolled police force. And the police force can't even react to the taxi companies. It doesn't, because it's tied into them as well. It's a very, very worrying situation.
William Sanderson Mayer, that full interview is on BizNews TV. Well, on to General Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi, who shook up the establishment a couple of months ago when he made an impromptu press conference at which he said that criminal elements and politicians and dirty cops are coordinating a campaign to plunder the state and other resources in this country. There are two points of view on General Mkhwanazi. Paul O'Sullivan is not impressed, and he says Mkhwanazi is a criminal. But the Premier of KZN appears to feel very differently. Yesterday, he invited the General to address a gathering in KwaZulu-Natal. The Premier himself was on the stage. And you can hear from this why there is growing support in the business community for this policeman who is swimming against the national tide and in many ways, however, is now being isolated as a result. Here's a short clip of what he said at that gathering.
But the population is growing and we are going down more. Thanks to who? The unions. The labor people who said we want salaries for our employees. So the more government employment increase salaries, is the lesser they employ. So the lesser they employ, the more crime they get. So we need to really interrogate and ask this thing. Prima, you said this country is going down in front of our eyes. The reality is we've got too many things that are wrong in our country that contribute. Labor laws are one of those. I can tell you that one. We moved to 25,000 employees. It was paying me to look at the NUMSA's Secretary General yesterday talking about the closures of UDA. So when we have companies that are starting to shut down, you need to ask yourself, and many of them shutting down in the plant, the higher the salary we need, the lesser the employment. And that's a reality. We can't avoid it, but it's a fact. We must face it. It is there. And we experience it in the police, and so is everyone. Now, therefore, we have to employ other means to try and balance this. Because if we don't have a person, that means we must employ a camera to help us to see at least. If we don't have a person, we must employ cars so that you can have more vehicles patrolling to cover the areas that people were normally supposed to cover. And all these things need money. That is unfortunate reality. So it's the truth that I'm glad we're all here that we'll have to face as we're talking to each other. We are yours. And we need you to guide us. If we are not behaving well, discipline us. If you're not fit for a job, fire us because we are employed by you. We don't have a guarantee that we can be in this job forever. You need to chase us away if you're not delivering.
Wow. Now, that's something that you haven't heard too often from a public servant and indeed from someone in the police force. The reason why it's so difficult to police, says General Mkhwanazi, remember he's the head of the South African Police Services in KwaZulu-Natal, is because the unions have got a stranglehold on salaries. Companies can't afford to pay the demands that the unions have. And as a consequence, they are reducing the number of people employed. And that is putting more on the streets. And that makes it more difficult for the police to control crime. Fascinating insights. Let's hope somebody's listening. Well, someone is listening to the concerns that have been expressed about the artificial intelligence boom or bubble on stocks around the world, and particularly in the United States. Yesterday, there was a sharp sell-off on Wall Street. Here's our partners at the Financial Times of London with a little bit of a summary on why.
Investors have the AI jitters. The tech-heavy NASDAQ composite fell 1.5% yesterday. That's its biggest one-day loss since August 1st. Meta and NVIDIA saw their stocks drop 2% and 3.5%, respectively. Palantir shares fell a whopping 9.4%. Investors are starting to question whether the prospects for AI will actually pay off. The declines came just a few days after OpenAI's CEO Sam Altman hinted that an AI bubble may be forming. Plus, a report by a branch of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology came out this week. It said, quote, 95% of organizations are getting zero return from their investments in generative AI. And this AI sell-off is bad news for the rest of the equities market. Tech stocks, especially the ones with AI strategies, are pretty much propping up the S&P 500 right now.
Well, I've got a friend who was smart enough to sell Palantir at $188. Now it's sitting at $150, and I'm sure he's feeling very proud of himself. But we did report last week from The Economist, which had a story for BizNews Premium members, which said that Palantir was the most overpriced stock of all time. And we love Palantir. We put it into the BizNews portfolios, but at $8.50, $188, a long, long way from there. Well, onto the local business scene. And today came the news that multi-billionaire Cobus Stoffberg proves the point that if you work for one company for a long time and that company is super successful, you too will be. Stoffberg retired off the boards of Prosus and Naspers. Yesterday was his last day. And his shares from the time that he spent at the company, which goes all the way back to 1985, granted, he was a very senior man for most of that period, but his shares are worth 3.5 billion rand. If you want to put that into some kind of perspective, his boss, Koos Bekker, is worth 31 billion rand. Those are numbers drawn from the latest Naspers and Prosus annual reports. It is primarily due to the investment that was made in the year 2000 in a then 30-person company called Tencent, based in Hong Kong. Tencent is now one of the great internet businesses, in fact, one of the great businesses in the world and the most valuable of all Chinese companies. Here in the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, the results came out today from DRD Gold. Very good news for shareholders in that the dividend was jacked up to 40 cents a share and the company is debt-free, so a lot more of that to come in future. The good news is that the benefits came from a significantly higher gold price, up 31% in the year to June 2025. The bad news, though, is that the yield, in other words, the gold that's been extracted from the material that it's putting through its mills, is lower. And as a consequence of that, production was down by 3%. And that means operating costs are rising. They were up by 8% in the year to end June. So the big challenge is to maintain volumes of gold output and to control costs. But for the moment, DRD Gold seems to be in a pretty good position and shareholders are happy. Well, the tailpiece for today, as promised, comes from the National Dialogue and it's Leshabela Sandra, who is the national president of the Representative Council of Learners. Now, this is a legally mandated body which exists in every public school in the country, and its members or its leaders are democratically elected by students. So she's the president of this whole body, which is represented in all public schools in South Africa. And as she told the National Dialogue, she's there to tell what millions and millions of learners in South Africa, the youth of our country, actually think about what's going on. Let's have a listen.
You know, Chair, representing the youth, we feel very disrespected. This is supposed to be a dialogue. Now, let me emphasize to you what a dialogue is. We speak our concerns.
If I could please ask for you to pause, can I please ask that we give her the opportunity to speak? Thank you.
We'll be given an opportunity to speak and raise our concerns. And then the particular person in which we are addressing those concerns to listens. Now, this is one thing that the ministers and the head of state of this country needs to understand. They are living off a salary that they are paid by the people of the Republic of South Africa. So the least that they could do is to sit in and listen to the concerns of the people of the Republic of South Africa. Chair, I want to oppose to what the gentleman there at front said. He said we should say at least five things and then focus on them. The ANC has been in power for more than 15 years and nothing has happened in 15 years. So if this is the platform, if this is the platform to raise each and every concerns without holding back, then we will raise those concerns, Chair. Chair, and another thing that we need to understand, that whatever that we're harvesting for right now, whatever that we're laboring for right now, it is for the youth. So if the president thinks that we as the youth, we're going to get into the same environment and pay the very same tax that is killing our parents, then he must be completely delusional.
Wow. Leshabela, from your lips to God's ears. This has been your Biz News Briefing. Until tomorrow. Cheerio.